This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05 on this Thursday. It's the 13th day of February. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us for today's Noon Business Hour. I'm Chris Kreidel.
And good afternoon, everybody. I'm John Hultman in for Sherman Kaplan, and we are broadcasting live from the Mazda 3 display at the Chicago Auto Show at McCormick Place. We have a kind of a cloudy day, and it's developed into some bursts of snow that are passing through until about 1:15 this afternoon, including, of course, the northwest area, mostly out around Aurora and Joliet and out that way, moving in from that direction. Should move through as colder air comes into the area. Right now we have 25 at O'Hare, 26 Midway, 28 on the lakefront. The wind chill is 14. And the WBBM Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank and also sponsored by Toyota.
On Wall Street, the Dow Industrials are up 30 points right now. The NASDAQ ahead 24 and the S&P 500 up by 6. So we've got some mild gains on Wall Street against the backdrop of some economic reports that were not very cheerful.
Retail sales, inventories, jobless claims. We're going to talk about that with an economist coming up. And the big cable deal, I mean big, and what's the impact of Comcast buying Time Warner for $45.2 billion. Also, of course, a look at Wall Street, how that's impacting on the markets, which are up a little bit today.
Because we're at the auto show, we're going to be taking a look at the best cars for your money. And also Technology Thursday, wearable technology.
Have your computer on your wrist, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's already the watches are being developed and all kinds of things. Of course, right now we're so busy with our big, huge winter coats that it's hard to wear anything else. But maybe by the spring.
It is.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, a busy day on the report front today. We've got latest numbers on retail sales, business inventories, and jobless claims. Let's dig through the data with a new guest for us here on the WBBM Noon Business Hour, Michael Gregory, who's head of U.S. economics at BMO Capital Markets here in Chicago. Michael, nice to have you with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Talk a little bit about the impact. Now, first of all, retail sales down 0.4%. We can just blame that on the weather or what?
Well, I think we can blame it on the weather for the most part. I mean, that's a huge decline, the most we've seen in a year and a half. And we had an inkling we were going to see a weak number. Auto sales were weaker. The jobs numbers that we got earlier were weak in the retail segment. So, and I think what's happening here is consumers have just cocooned. I think no one is interested generally across America and wading into the malls and the stores, and as a result, the traffic has fallen and spending has fallen. So I think a large part of it has been the weather, and it's been an awful winter, as we all know.
Well, you know, talking about part of that is auto sales, and of course we're at the auto show here today. But this is not decisions that are going to be just cut off. They've probably just been postponed, right?
Oh, exactly. I mean, like, certain things won't be made up, like to the extent you didn't go out for dinner or you didn't go out to see a movie, maybe you don't make that up. But to the extent you were planning on buying something, but you simply were waiting till the weather was a little more favorable before you went to the mall or went to the store, then I think this is pent up. So I suspect that once we get a little more seasonable weather, nicer weather, that we will see a bit of a pickup in consumer spending as those that have decided not to spend over the past couple months venture back out.
Do you think that the jobs reports for December and January were anomalies as well?
Oh, I do think so. For December, it clearly was the weather, and you see that in things like construction jobs and people that couldn't go to work because of the weather. In January, it wasn't clear that was the case, but where you saw the impact from the weather was in any sector that required customer traffic, physical customer traffic, not clicking on the internet, were down in terms of job creation, the retail sector, education, and healthcare. So So I suspect it was very much the weather as well. Now, this week, actually, is the survey week for the February survey. So we will see what happens. We've had some pretty dismal weather in many parts of the country, particularly in the south, and now, of course, along the eastern shore. So we'll see what happens, but I suspect we may have 2 or 3 months here, in December, January, February, of weather-affected data. But again, it's only temporary. Warmer weather should you know, see a lot of this bounce back.
So what is your estimation of U.S. growth this year, your long-range outlook for 2014?
Well, we're looking for a decent number. We're about 2.8% growth, which is not bad. I mean, I do think we may have downshifted from the days when we normally would see 3 or 4% growth. That's okay. I mean, I'll take close to 3. And so I do think we ended off 2013 in terrific shape. Recall we had a 4% range number in the third quarter of last year, a 3 handle on growth in the fourth quarter. That's roughly around 3.5% on average. That's not bad. Now, we will pay a little bit of a price in the first quarter. We're looking perhaps to dip slightly below 2%. Some of that is the weather. Some of that is a little bit of inventory correction. We've had a pretty hefty buildup to the second half of last year. So, you know, perhaps we'll get a little bit of a correction from that perspective. But again, I think in the second quarter, we'll be back close to 3% growth. And as consumers and businesses begin to spend just a little bit more.
Janet Yellen taking over officially the Fed this week testifying in Washington. That had a sort of a calming effect, didn't it, on the economy, you think?
Well, absolutely. I mean, what we want to see is business as usual. We don't want surprises. We don't want risk. And I think this week is particularly interesting, I think, for business confidence specifically, because you know, we've been, for the last few years, hanging over the heads of many businesses, and their decisions about hiring and new capital equipment have been the shenanigans in Washington. You've had, worries about government shutdown, worries about debt default, but fortunately this week, Congress has managed to push this all the way back for at least another year. Great news. And then on the monetary policy front, you know, a little bit of uncertainty, what's going to happen at when the leadership of the Fed goes through transition. It turns out nothing. It's the same old, same old, and that's exactly what we want to see. And so I do think that in addition to consumers coming out of their cocoon in the next couple of months, I suspect we may even see a little pickup in business optimism in terms of hiring, in terms of actual some investment, as they've been waiting to see the signs that, you know, they don't have to worry about what's happening in Washington. All they have to worry about is, you know, what's leaving the factory gate and whether customers are coming in their front door.
Well, it's nice to meet you today, Michael, and we hope you come back on the Noon Business Hour.
Thank you very much. It's nice being here.
Michael Gregory is head of U.S. economics at BMO Capital Markets here in Chicago.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A mega merger is in the works involving two telecommunication giants. Pending government approval, the country's top cable TV provider, Comcast, will buy its nearest rival, Time Warner Cable. The stock deal valued at $45 billion. Shares of Comcast are down, Time Warner up. Let's see what this means with Tom Layson, president of New Media Solutions and NewMediaSolutions.tv in Seattle. Tom, thanks for joining us today.
Good to be here as always, guys.
All right. What's your reaction to this? What does this mean?
I know this will come as a great shock to you, being familiar with me now as a guest, and I'm a little bit have a different opinion about this, a little bit of an iconoclast when it comes to this merger. There's a lot of gnashing of teeth and wringing of hands about the competitive landscape and what it means for the consumer, and I have to tell you, I don't see any of those implications. When one monopoly buys another monopoly, I don't think it has any effect on the competitive landscape. Cable companies in your local markets are monopolies. There isn't more than one water pipe going to your house to help you flush your body, and there isn't more than one broadband provider going to your house to help you get onto the Internet. So quite frankly, I think there will certainly be an FCC review, certainly will be a Department of Justice review, and possibly a decree so everybody can feel like they got something out of it. But when it comes to the consumer, I feel like it's going to be relatively transparent.
This also comes at a time when the monopolies are losing some of their customers because people are just cutting the cord and getting their programming directly from providers going around cable. So that the industry itself is under fire, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, this cord-cutting phenomenon is something we've talked about extensively, and it is indeed happening. And quite frankly, this kind of deal makes me think again, and I'm probably standing alone on this, that as far as I'm concerned, if I'm Comcast or a cable TV provider, why don't I say, you know something, folks, we're going to simplify your lives. We're going to simplify your bill. You're going to get TV, and you're going to get your phone service. You're going to get it for free. And we're just going to charge you $150 a month for cable. Because let's face it, this deal is really about broadband. That is what the crux of this deal is. It's that pipe going into your house. It's still a monopoly. And quite frankly, whether people cut the cord or not, that's what they're paying for.
The number of monopolies are going down, though. I mean, we've got Time Warner and Comcast together. We've got a Charter. We've got U-verse, AT&T, and then we have DirecTV. That plays into the picture too, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I think for the satellite providers, this is certainly interesting. I certainly think that they can make an argument that says, listen, Dish and Direct, we have to merge now too, because let's face it, we're facing a national competitor in the form of the big three cable providers, Cox and Comcast, and what's left of some of the other, you know, Charter and a few of the others. So, yeah, I think it could definitely change that discussion about, the structure of the competition as it exists from satellite. But again, when one monopoly buys another monopoly, you still have a monopoly.
Starting to sound like the airline industry. But Tom, the bottom line for the consumer, are prices going to go up or would they go up anyway?
I think prices are already built on a monopoly model. Again, if you're a Comcast subscriber, you're paying what they think they can get from you. About $150 a month right now, they know how to do the market analysis that says if I go to $160, I'm cutting the cable. At $140, I'm kind of able to hang in there. There is no other cable provider competing for my dollar when it comes to the broadband service into my house. So this is a deal at the corporate level. It has to do with their national footprint. It has to do with some back-end efficiencies. But I think, once again, we already, as consumers, live in this heavily monopolized environment when it comes to that service. And that was laid out in the very beginning when cities and counties provided their franchise agreements to cable providers. And I really don't see it changing that much.
Would you think that now we have, you have to sign up for 2 years or 1 year and so on. That's sort of disappearing, at least with phones. Is that going to happen with the cable and satellite too, do you think?
I don't know why it would. They've got you. You want a cable going to your house? Well, and guess what? I want a 3-year deal now. I really don't know what's preventing them from what's really ever prevented them from dictating terms.
They've got us, Tom, as long as we decide to continue to use cable and not cut the cord. Is this industry going to...
Well, there you go. And that's where they're starting to get into. They've got pricing models. They have a feel for what you'll put up with and what you don't. And I think that's really the only limiting factor as opposed to what we would look at as a traditional competitive landscape.
Tom, always good to have you with us. Tom Lason is president of New Media Solutions and NewMediaSolutions.tv in Seattle, Washington.
WBBM News Time 12:25. Let's get the latest on the markets with Adrian Mitchell at MarketWatch.com.
Stocks are posting moderate gains. The Dow up 48 points, the Nasdaq up 27, and the S&P up 8. Retail sales took a hit from winter weather in January. The Commerce Department says they fell almost 0.5%. And today's East Coast snowstorm serves as yet another reminder. Storms can hurt stores.
You try to put an explanation as to why the market is coming back off of the, down 90 points at the open. I think people have sort of factored this in. They've thought about it. It makes sense to them.
Robert Pavlik is Banyan Partners' chief market strategist. And by the way, he did not make the snowy trek to his office in New York City today. New jobless claims rose 8,000 last week to 339,000. They were expected to stay about flat. There is a huge deal in the works in the cable TV industry. Comcast says it will buy number 2 Time Warner Cable for a $45 billion sum. Let's check the grain market now with Pete Manhart at Base Commodities and Normal. Pete?
Beans are leading the way up today after not very good exports. Beans were up 4 to 8 and then all of a sudden took off. We're up 22 right now at 13.45 in the March. Been 2.5 higher. November's new crop, 11.34, up 15.25, 4 off their high. Corn with good exports is down 2.5 at 4.55 1/4. And March wheat up 4.5 at 5.91 1/2. Beans leading the way up. This is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Once again, the Dow up 49 points. Business news at 25 and 55 past each hour. Live from the MarketWatch.com newsroom, Adrian Mitchell, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM, WBBM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Kreidel.
And I'm John Hultman for Sherman Kaplan, and we are broadcasting live from the Mazda 3 display at the Chicago Auto Show at McCormick Place. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are a little higher today. We'll take a check of the markets just ahead.
It's expected to be a breakout year for wearable technology. We'll talk about it, the wave of the future here during our Technology Thursday segment.
U.S. News and World Report is out with its annual list of best cars for the money. We'll see which ones made the cut.
A mother and daughter recovering from gunshot wounds this afternoon after being targeted while in their car in Romeoville.
Much of the U.S. Eastern Seaboard is suffering through a major winter snowstorm.
WBBM Market Watch, Dow Jones Industrials now up 54 points, 16,018 is the figure right now. NASDAQ up 29, the S&P 500 up 9.
Okay.
Temperature.
And right now we've got 25 degrees with a wind chill of 14. You may see a burst of snow wherever you live. Mm-hmm. It's been moving from the northwest and through the Chicago area in the next hour or so. And there's also snow showers in the forecast for later today with a high temperature of 34 and overnight low of 13. WBBM News Time, 12:31. The noon business hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
Well, stocks, as we say, are in plus territory this afternoon. That's good news. Let's focus on Wall Street. Wall Street, that is, with returning guest Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management and editor of the Money Master Stock Report at janjig.com in Greenwich, Connecticut. Vahan, nice to have you with us again. Talk about what's happening in the markets. We're on an upswing again here.
Yeah, you know, today has been a very unusual day. We started off very weak with the futures indicating a pretty sizable sell-off. The market opened up down, and then, you know, things turned around. I guess investors decided that they wanted to focus on the good news rather than the bad news. The good news, of course, is that there was a very large merger announced today. And there was also pretty decent earnings coming out of a couple of companies, particularly CBS and Goodyear. But the bad news was that, you know, Cisco's earnings were absolutely terrible. That was announced last night after the market closed. Retail numbers were also very weak. And, you know, overall, I would say that the economic news was not particularly good, but investors are bidding up stocks anyway.
Most of the bad news focused on the weather, do you think, in considerably in the eastern part and the southeastern part of the country, and the Midwest, too?
Well, that's true, and I think the weather is being used as an excuse. A lot of investors and economists are saying that, you know, the numbers for January and in recent weeks are going to be very bad because of the weather. So I think the fact that these numbers are weak, you know, people are just excusing it and saying that we'll overlook it and wait till next time.
Well, Wall Street always likes a big deal. That kind of makes things exciting over there. But Comcast investors are selling off today. Do you think that they're thinking that Comcast is paying too much?
Yeah, probably. I mean, that's not unusual. Typically, when you have a merger announcement, it's the target company that runs up. So we are actually seeing that happening today. Time Warner is up quite a bit, and Comcast is down. But that's not unusual for the target to go up and the acquirer to go down.
Well, after the huge year that Wall Street had last year, now we're seeing some headlines you may have seen on MarketWatch this week, that the comparison between the just before the crash in 1929 and the current chart of Wall Street, the Dow Industrials. Is that like going way over the other side too much, or do you think that there is, are you concerned about this year on Wall Street?
Well, you know, we see these comparisons come up quite a bit. We've actually seen them in the past few years. Somebody comes up with the charts that shows how similar they are to the crash of 29. I am concerned that the market is overbought, but in no way am I worried about that type of a crash. Personally, I think that for the full year, we're going to see a relatively flat market. I wouldn't be surprised to see some more ups and downs. I'm a little disappointed that we didn't get the full 10% correction. I was hoping to see that. I think over the long run, those kinds of corrections are actually quite healthy for the market. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have some more sell-offs between now and the end of the year, and perhaps even a 10% or even a 15% sell-off. But for the full year, I expect to be relatively flat.
What do you advise a small investor in an atmosphere like this where it gets a little scary?
Well, you know, it's becoming more and more difficult for small investors to trade because of the sophistication and the high value computers and hardware and software that institutional investors are using. So the best thing for small investors to do is to invest. And that basically means, you know, identify the stocks that you think are really good, that are providing good value, buy them and use weakness to buy more and invest for the long term. You know, today, for example, the market is currently up after being down. But, you know, when you ask yourself, well, what kind of stocks are up the most today? They tend to be the most overvalued stocks. We're seeing, you know, very overvalued technology stocks going up even higher today. But even in the tech sector, we're seeing a stock like Cisco, which provides tremendous value and a 3% dividend. Yes, they had disappointing earnings, but, you know, this might be an opportunity for a small investor to take a position in a stock like that if they're willing to invest for the long run.
Depending on your age as an investor, Vahan, do you when you get older, do you put most of it into a fund or several funds?
Well, you know, I'm not particularly fond of mutual funds. I do like exchange-traded funds, and I think that's a good way to get broad market exposure. I like them over mutual funds for a number of reasons, including typically lower expense ratios and favorable tax advantages. However, whether you use individual stocks or exchange-traded funds or mutual funds, I think as you get older, you really need to focus more on the asset allocation rather than, you know, which particular instrument you're using to get the exposure to each asset class. It's important to, you know, understand your constraints and your objectives, and if you need income, to focus on instruments that provide income. Traditionally, we used to use fixed income securities, but now in this low interest rate environment, dividends are often a good substitute for interest. And, you know, a stock like Cisco, for example, I think is a good way to generate income.
Vahan, thanks for spending a few minutes with us today. Appreciate it. Vahan Janjigian is Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management, editor of Money Master Stock Report at janjig.com.
We're going to talk about wearable technology coming up next.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It is Technology Thursday on the Noon Business Hour. Today we explore what is expected to be a boom this year in the sales and the use of wearable technology. Daniel Maddy is an analyst at Canalys in Palo Alto, California. Daniel, thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour.
Thank you for having me.
I think we've all heard about the computer watches that are being designed, but when we talk about wearable technology, extend this for us. What other things are kind of in the picture here?
Sure. Canalys thinks that the current wearable devices that are out there and going forward in the future are really about the consumerization of health. So right now, you do have a category of products from Nike, Jawbone, Fitbit, companies like Basis that provide these wearable bands that are activity monitors and track your movement, your sleep patterns, maybe do more sophisticated things like heart rate sensing. And so really for wearables, that the focus is the health and fitness sensors and providing that kind of personal advice to users to help them change their behavior and improve their health.
There's also an increasing use of neuroscience, is there not, in terms of wearable technology?
Sure, absolutely. I think a lot of the heart problems right now, aside from incorporating increasingly sophisticated sensors are in the analysis at that data. So I think you're going to see a lot of big software companies that hire a lot of medical experts that are skilled at assessing that sensor data and being able to analyze it and provide actionable data to users, not just numbers, but actionable advice.
You know, when we were talking about the smart watches and that sort of thing, and then you've got to, of course, be connected to Wi-Fi in some way. Have you seen word of things still to come that we haven't even heard about yet?
Sure, absolutely. The elephant in the room is obviously Apple, and they've made a number of hires that are being tracked closely in terms of the medical experts. So I think they do have quite a grand ambition in this space. And in terms of, wireless communication, the real enabling technology is Bluetooth Low Energy. So I don't think we're going to see Wi-Fi and cellular in these wearable products, just because it's too strenuous on battery life. It's too power hungry. So Bluetooth Low Energy, new types of sensors, that's really the platform for these devices going forward.
Are these things available now? And where do you go to find them?
Again, right now, companies like Nike, Jawbone, Fitbit are providing the best products in terms of being focused on being wearable, unobtrusive, and actually doing a good job of, tracking these metrics and providing data and analysis to users. So they do exist right now to this extent. They are fairly limited in functionality, but we think it's going to improve over time. And again, you can talk to almost any vendor in the smartphone, PC, tablet space, and they're all interested in this space. So you're going to see a lot of software expertise coming to the market.
Daniel, we're talking about what's new on the horizon coming soon. Let's look out a few years, 5, 10 years. What can you imagine we will be able to do with technology?
A lot of the ambition is in these new types of sensors that haven't, that aren't in your smartphone already, that are unique to being in a wearable form factor. So right now we have very limited sensors in terms of tracking movement, in terms of tracking maybe heart rate. But over time, we might see more sensors related to blood pressure, the oxygen content in your blood, respiratory rate, again, more sophisticated sensors. So I think really the company that provides a device with these more sophisticated sensors in the device and provides a platform on top of that, that's really the future.
A fascinating field for sure. Daniel, thanks for joining us today, talking about the future of wearable technology. Daniel Matty, analyst at Canalys in Palo Alto, California. Now, tomorrow is a very special day. It's Valentine's Day. And we're going to, on the Noon Business Hour, we're going to have our weekly feature, Lunch Money Friday, looking at just how important Valentine's Day is to restaurants.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, we're at the auto show, as we say, and surrounded by plenty of potential car buyers as we broadcast today from McCormick Place. Let's give them and everyone who's listening to us today some help in getting great bang for their automotive buck. Joining us from U.S. News Best Cars is out with its look at the best cars for the money is Jamie Deaton, managing editor of U.S. News Best Cars in Washington, D.C., joining us for the first time. Jamie, nice to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, there are all different categories here we're dealing with, from subcompacts to large cars to wagons to vans to hybrids and all sorts of things. Give us a sort of an overview of what are the best cars that people should be looking for, and do they have lots of extras and add-ons?
Yeah, the awards cover 21 different automotive categories, and you can actually view all of the awards by going to usnews.com/cars. But looking at these at an overview of all the winners, one thing that they really have in common is that they can actually be customized to suit the consumer's needs. So if you take, for example, the Mazda 3, which is our best compact car for the money, if you want just an inexpensive car for commuting, you don't feel like you need a lot of features, then you don't have to get it that way. But you can also add in a lot of technology like navigation and Bluetooth to make your life a little bit easier if that's something you're willing to pay for.
Touch screens is a big part of the new car business too, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Touch screens are almost becoming, mandatory. Even though they're not standard equipment, they definitely need to be offered by the automaker for the car to be competitive. And it's one of those things that is a little bit controversial because touch screens can be a little bit tough to operate when you're driving a car. But, for keeping that dashboard clean-looking and uncluttered, a touch screen is tough to beat.
Do most people, when they buy a car, buy one that's right on the showroom floor? People don't order cars anymore, do they?
Well, you can order cars, but most people do just buy one from, you know, that's sitting on the dealer's lot, or they, you know, have the dealer make a trade with another dealer to get exactly what they want. And honestly, you know, as somebody, you know, who writes about cars and studies the industry, I would recommend holding out until you get the exact, you know, color you want, the features you want, and the package you want. In some cases, that does mean ordering it, which can take, you know, a couple of extra weeks to get it there. But, you know, once you do get it, you know it hasn't been sitting on a dealer lot for a while, and the absolute worst thing that you can do to a car is just have it sit. And then you also know that it's made, you know, just for you, and it's exactly what you want. So that ownership experience is that much more enjoyable because it's a car that's tailor-made for you.
And you should do your homework before you go into the showroom?
Always do your homework before you go into the showroom. I mean, I would recommend anybody who's listening, go down to the Chicago Auto Show, because when you're shopping at an auto show, you're able to look at cars across multiple brands without a lot of interference from salespeople. And most salespeople aren't interfering, but it just gives you time, you know, to look at things on your own and make up your own mind. And the other nice thing about shopping at an auto show is it's inside, so you're not digging through snow to try and get a look at the car you're interested in.
And there's a lot of people here today looking at cars and SUVs, et cetera. But the auto industry had a very good year last year. Are dealers still negotiating? Are they still giving you something?
You know, it depends on the model of the car that you're looking at, because some cars are doing better than others. But we're not seeing the kind of incentives and price slashing that we saw, for example, in 2008 when dealers were massively overstocked with cars. What's changed is that the auto industry has gotten a lot better at managing inventory, so they're not building more cars than they need. If anything's the case, it's they're building fewer cars than they actually need. However, you know, January was a pretty tough month for the automotive industry because we had such terrible weather nationwide. Starting to look like February might be the same thing, you know, weather-wise. So if you go in towards the end of the month, you might be able to get a deal. Another thing that you can do is a lot of organizations offer certified price programs where you can buy with a guaranteed price. You don't have to haggle. The dealer, you just walk in with a certificate, the dealer will honor it. At US News Best Cars, we offer that. I know a lot of other organizations offer it as well. If you don't like to negotiate, but you do like getting a good deal, going with one of those pre-negotiated prices can be a pretty good option.
Jamie, great to have you with us. I hope we talk again soon. Jamie Deaton is managing editor at US News Best Cars, Washington, D.C. WBBM News Time, 12:55. Let's see how the markets are moving now as we go to Adrian Mitchell at MarketWatch.com.
And they are moving up. We're on track for gains for the day. The Dow up 57 points, the NASDAQ up 34, and the S&P up 9.5, as those investors who did manage to make it into work through the East Coast snowstorm consider news on jobs and retail sales. First-time jobless claims unexpectedly rose last week to 339,000, and January retail sales are below expectations, falling 0.4%. Blame it on the winter weather.
Some of that was undoubtedly caused by the adverse weather that has been afflicting the entire country. But nevertheless, the household sector is not in great shape. The saving rate is low. There's not much income growth. And so the wherewithal to really expand spending just doesn't exist.
That's Vincent Malanga of LaSalle Economics. Sears and Macy's are moving higher after the retail sales news. Shares of Sears Holdings are up almost 7%. Investors not shopping for Whole Foods, though. Same-store sales did rise, but quarterly profit and sales missed estimates, and the upscale grocery store is lowering its outlook for the year. Shares of Whole Foods Market are down 8%. Business news at 25 and 55 past each hour. Live from the MarketWatch.com newsroom, Adrian Mitchell, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.